Hello, everybody, and welcome to Buck Wild, the bonus miniseries from the Buck Starts Here, where we take one last cannonball into the powdered wig pool that is the revolutionary era. I'm Kyle, joined by Eric Mason, my credentialed and very opinionated co-host, and we are tying up the loose ends in Eric's notebook. What did we miss when we did the Great Monroe?
So I think we did Monroe good. I think we dove in a lot of stuff. He was a little.
I think we did him well.
Yeah, like there was a lot of interesting side notes. We talked about him because his presidency was fairly anemic, and not in a bad way. It was just there was not that much controversy.
No, he just seemed more of like, I'm going to put good people in good positions, and I'm going to get out of the way, and I'm going to let them do their thing.
Dude, right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to, I became very obsessed when I was going through here of understanding what the heck, how did we end up with Liberia? So I wanted to just like tickle the part of my brain that just wants to talk about Liberia.
Didn't they have like some kind of weird like social oligarchy for their like their government? It wasn't even like a democracy.
Dude, that's pretty much what it ended up turning into. It started with the American Colonialization Society, and which the ACS that was founded like Madison was a supporter, Monroe was a supporter. Like it was very bizarre. It was funded by like a lot of like pro-slavery people too, who were like their goals were basically like a chance for full civil rights in Africa. And it was some people as part of the ACS were motivated by true altruism, and others were just very, very aggressive racial segregists. And they like came together and they pooled money and they wanted to start this, you know, this new country, this colony in West Africa. And, you know, that colony was eventually became Liberia. You know, it started out with which is now the capital city of Liberia, Monrovia. And, you know, Monrovia, interesting enough, they went there to purchase land, and the land was supposed to be used as freed slaves. A lot of slaves who were freed with something called the Liberian Clause, which basically said, if you come back, you're going to be a slave, or you could possibly be a slave. Now, obviously, if you left there, went to Liberia, then went back to, like, Boston, you're like not going to be a slave, but
if you go to Charleston, might have a different experience.
Might have a different experience, which would be a wild move if you did. And actually, very few people actually came back from Liberia. Most of them died in the first, you know, 5 years. There was two attempts.
When did it actually found? Like when did it start up?
Yes, the first attempt was 1820, where they basically went down there. They tried to find an island. The island was wicked inhospitable. A bunch of people died of dysentery and malaria. Then later on, they negotiated with several chiefs.
Makes me want to go make a game. Instead of the Oregon Trail, we'll make it the Monroe Trail.
Monrovia Trail. It would just be so much more dysentery.
So much more dysentery.
It's just only, it's just only dysentery. So yeah, the first attempt was in 1820. A bunch of settlers showed up to Sherbro Island, which is actually modern day Sierra Leone. So it's kind of interesting that they were a little way not ways off, but a little not where modern Liberia is.
It's pretty close though. That's not that far off.
Yeah, it's still West Africa.
It's still along that whatever that swell is. The swell that mates to South America, if you squeeze them together, right?
Squeeze. I like that. So a year later, this guy, Lieutenant Stockton, he's a U.S. Navy officer, and he's pretty much like the, I don't want to say the enforcer, but he's the guy who was like supposed to get stuff done. And this guy, Dr. Ayers, he's a representative from the ACS, and they go and meet with the Dai and Bassa people, who are like the important leaders of this town, which would eventually become Monrovia, and they begin to negotiate for land purchases. Well, the concept of like land purchase back then was different. Like usually, land purchase when you talk to one of these chiefs was more the concept of a right of use agreement. Think of it more of like leasing than it is buying,
like grazing rights or farming rights kind of deal.
Yeah, and these are very, sometimes, you know, you get the, unfortunately in history, sometimes we paint these chiefs as if they're just unsophisticated traders, which is ironic because their entire culture is built around trading. Like
They're trading things they have no idea about because there's new concepts to them.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're going to have some gaps in knowledge.
I will say, you know, They traded a lot of humans. A lot of these, yeah, these were the tribes responsible largely for the slave trade. I always describe it this way, because sometimes people paint it like, oh, they didn't understand the concept of money. And it's like, well, no. If you rented your house to somebody, you rented a room to somebody, and you went to the grocery store and came back, and they took over your entire house and locked you out and said, it's my house, you'd be like, what? No, that's not what our agreement is. Right. And then you'd be really angry at that person, even though you signed an agreement with them, but it's just contextually different. Because at this time, a lot of traders on the West Coast, that's how they had little ports, and then they had these agreements. So the idea of like a permanent settlement.
Yeah, and I'm going to guess a lot of these agreements were probably written in languages they didn't understand.
These people were, I don't know about that. Because okay, they had European weapons.
Not quite as bad as the way
stuff.
We did it here.
Yeah, if you're trying to equate it to like Native Americans and. All over the United States, but in the frontier.
Well, basically any colonialism in general, really, I think you can kind of boil that down to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, yeah, exactly. No, this was a sophisticated culture.
This wasn't their first time around. They weren't.
No, they've been trading, unfortunately, goods and people for a very long time. They had European weapons. They were were sophisticated. They knew what was going on. I'll put it this way. One of the examples I read that I really thought was interesting was, clearly, this is a very sophisticated culture and tribe, because not only were they able to trade in the horrible trade of humans, but they had trade lines established, but they also weren't taken as slaves. I doubt the Europeans viewed them as equals, didn't view them as these, you know, savages that didn't have, ownership concepts.
Right.
So it gets established. It's actually, I think it has like a 3.9. It has a Google review. Providence Island, the place they buy. How do I like that?
I'd love some of the good things that have Google reviews. Like there's an old nuclear dumping ground, I think, that has reviews.
5 out of 5 would go again. But you end up having this big migration flow that goes out to Liberia. Monrovia starts building up. Monrovia is a small, even today, small city, only 37,000 people. And Liberia starts to grow. And they start growing and basically form the Commonwealth of Liberia that gets its name changed in 1839. And it does through a lot, actually very little military. There was some military skirmishes. It was mostly defensive. Now, a lot of the tribes around Monrovia, what later become Liberia, they did have an idea of ownership, right? But they didn't have this idea of land. So they viewed land as communal, tied to a lineage, but often, and this is the key here, often granted for conditional use, for trade, but not this idea of this is not where I live. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So they had these like diplomatic agreements with these nations all around them. And the nations were, they understood the concept of land has value, I need to trade it. And they were able to negotiate these trades. But then it was like, whoa, you moved in here, you ripped up everything. Like, again, I would equate it to somebody leasing a house, and you come and somebody knocked down your house and rebuilt one. You're like, what are you doing? You don't have the right to do this. Caused a lot of tension.
And all their friends are living there, too, now.
And then all their friends are living there.
Yeah. And they stole the house next door.
But what's kind of interesting is that individual states started sponsoring purchases, and I put that in quotation marks. And so you had like Maryland and Africa, which was an area that existed near Liberia from 1834 to 1857. So it was around for like 23 years, got absorbed in Liberia. And there's also colonies that were funded by Mississippi and Pennsylvania that would go in there to, that would be built kind of as part of this, that would eventually get absorbed into Liberia. And so this goes on and on. And eventually, you know, we do eventually see Liberia break off into its own nation. This comes in about 1852-ish time period. It hasn't gone well for Liberia. You know, Liberia just to run through some stats on them, their GDP is $4.7 billion in 2024, which is, you know, minuscule for a population of 6 million. You know, Norway's a population of 6 million, just to give reference. Right, yeah. Actually, 5 million, I think, in Norway. Massachusetts is 6 million. I think Massachusetts has a GDP 100 times higher. They're ranked 43rd out of 54th for African nations for GDP. The GDP per capita, $1,534.
That's disappointing, man. You'd think something with Monroe's name, you really hoped it would have done better.
Yeah, and it's just sad. They really haven't developed, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, they were never set up for success, right? I think there's that idea of, I'm not, you know, not to sound too much like an economist, but I can't help but what I am. This idea of like, oh, I can just take a bunch of people and put them in an area and there's going to be economic production. It's like, there will be some. You need capital.
You need capital, you need infrastructure, you need education.
Yeah, and so they went over there and you have systems, you have tribes, and you have and cultures that have existed for literally tens of thousands of years. They never stood a chance. They weren't naturally immune to diseases, and then they became their own ecosystem, their own country. And then you're just responsible for yourself when you're in your own country, and there has been a ton of this direct investment. And, you know, part of it, you know, one of the sad parts, I guess you could say, the people who did the ACS, did they intend to do this, right? Is this just a horrible tragedy? And as you read through Liberia, you're like, it's kind of not. I think this was mostly I think this was, you know, segregationists, mm-hmm. who maybe had a little tinge of guilt for what they were doing. But it doesn't change if you just take the people and bring them over to Liberia, right? Like, that doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
So interesting, though, and, you know, as you discover stuff. So I went and looked. They said, who was the board? So they had pretty much a representative republic, right? They had a representative democracy. But the governor was appointed by the board of governors of the ACS. So what's my first question? I go, oh, who's on the board of governors? First guy, Robert Finley. He's a Presbyterian minister. Okay, that makes sense. Then Bushrod Washington, who was a Supreme Court justice and the nephew of George Washington.
Then of Liberia?
The ACS, which was based in D.C., that would appoint the governor for Liberia. Sorry, oh, don't worry. These guys are all white.
Good.
And then there's this guy, Charles Fenton Mercer, who was a Virginia congressman, and he was a big politician pushing for this. Virginia politician pushing for this probably should be the flag again. And then Henry Clay, who was a Speaker of the House. Oh, and then Francis Scott Key. The guy who wrote the national anthem.
Yeah. Yep.
Was one of the people deciding who effectively the president of Liberia was for several decades.
Why?
Why? Why? Why does that sentence exist?
Why is this? Yeah, okay. So he never really had a chance.
No, absolutely not.
That's sad.
You know, the other part is that they weren't, for those first 25 years, they were never really independent. You have people making decisions from a couple thousand miles away. It just didn't work. I mean, the ACS was issuing the laws and regulations for settlers.
Do you know what would have been amazing? As if France or the UK or somebody would have, or maybe who would have been big in Africa at the time?
Portugal and Spain would probably be
one of those two. If they would have come up with their own Monroe Doctrine,
that would have been
stopping melting in Africa.
Brain melting,
especially with Spain.
and like, part of the story of Liberia gets lost because, you know, 40 years later, well, 60 years after its founding, 40 years after it becomes free, you have the Berlin Conference where Europe's just like, let's destroy Africa. This should be fun. Right. It's like, right. But what's interesting is Liberia didn't even get its first black governor until the 1840s. This guy, Joseph Jenkins Roberts.
Wow.
And he did become the first.
At least you said 1840s and not 1940s.
Oh, yeah.
It could have been a lot worse.
But he did, he did become. He also became the first president when they became their own country in 1852. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
And just to give you guys a little comparison here is how big is Liberia? It's almost exactly the size of Maryland. It's 12,000 square miles, give or take, and Maryland is 12,400 miles, give or take. So big territory, decent. Like 12,000 square miles is big.
It looks tiny if you're looking at a map of Africa, though.
Yeah, especially with the Mercator projection, kind of distorting that a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
A lot of it.
doesn't the Mercator projection, doesn't that affect the poles more than the
Yeah, it makes center? Them look bigger.
Yeah.
So things closer to the equator look smaller.
Oh, okay.
So if your brain's comparing, because most of the land, two-thirds of land mass in the northern hemisphere.
Yeah.
So one last thing on here. is I was very curious about what day-to-day life looked like in Liberia. It's got to be weird, right? Like, you show up, you're a freed slave, you showed up, you're on a boat, you get over there, and they're like, here you go. And they leave. Like, they probably don't care about you.
Is there anything in place? Is there any, like, place to, like, buy food? Is there housing?
Food was super scarce. Actually, there was a group of freed slaves who went back to Baltimore after going to Liberia and went around to different churches being like, this is horrible. Like, this
doesn't
work.
Please give us some food, yeah.
Yeah, they were like, over there is horrible, we're never going back. Got to be pretty crazy if you're a slave to go back to where you were a slave as opposed to staying there. Like, that's got to be pretty wild. But it was really cool, really interesting about when I was researching this is just the raw amount of firsthand accounts you have of free people going over there. It's a wave of data. It's a wave of information during that time period. So I got really obsessed with trying to figure out what a day-to-day life looked like in there. Because I thought it was interesting. What does a day-to-day life look like there? It was bleak. Not that I was expecting it to be roses, but it was bleak. Basically what it was it was a lot of subsistent farming, but the soil wasn't great for farming. They had awful trade relations, often awful relations with the tribes around them, which trade relations. Trade is like the best thing for development. But then there was a ton of militia practice because every so often, tensions would flare up with local tribes and they would have to basically defend, like, Providence Island is an island. It's in between these two. It's like landmass here, Providence Island's right there. And they would have to defend it. But the tribes, I mean, it's funny. I mean, they were, to call them tribes, which they were more like just a nomadic culture. They had, modern European weapons for the time. So this wasn't like they were fighting people with, sticks and stones. They were fighting effectively a well-trained militia.
Yeah, a Mongol horde with modern weapons.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and money. Like, good money.
A lot of money, because they're trading in...
trading in horrible
in
things.
Yeah.
So Liberia, unfortunately... we didn't get to talk about it a lot during that show, but it's a depressing story. But I think it's interesting, and it also shows that maybe just trying to apply that type of cultural standards to a completely different area of the world is maybe not the most productive thing in the world.
Right, and that just how often is that the right solution? It was just give somebody a country somewhere else and just not have to deal with them anymore.
Yeah. Also, like, putting them in some other place in the world and giving them no capital or anything to build
to that. Yeah.
Is also very bizarre to me.
That's almost like, it's almost murder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. That's it for this dispatch from Loose Ends, Buckwild. Now, we may have signed off on the main episodes, but history's never tidy, and the Founding Fathers left behind more loose threads than ratified documents. Stick around. We've got more eras, more chaos, and plenty more bucks to chase. Please hit those like buttons, subscribe on your favorite platforms. We'll see you all next week. Produced by China Shop Productions.